Hi, everyone. Steve Adubato. This is Lessons in Leadership. My colleague, Mary Gambit. Mary, in just a couple moments, we're going to introduce a segment that I did in interview with Dr. Pat Leahy. He's the president of Monmouth University, which is a terrific university down in West Long Branch. Pretty sure it is. They have the Bruce Springsteen Initiative. It's the it's his archives and Center for American Music, which is great. And a whole bunch of other things going on at Monmouth and the challenges that higher ed leaders face in challenging times, let's just say. Mary, before we do that, can I do something real quick?
Sure.
So we talk about this extreme ownership book a lot. So I want to talk about ownership real quick. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I'm a Knicks fan. Scott, you got the basketball here, the Knicks basketball anywhere? So you could throw
it yourself.
So I'm an athlete, Mary. Stop. So that's our Knicks ball. I don't know where the Knicks are going to be down the road, but as we're taping in January, the playoffs haven't started yet. So Mikal Bridges plays for the Knicks. He had some crappy games. He didn't have any. There were some poor games he played, and they paid a lot of money for him, gave up a lot of draft choices, a lot of players. Here's what he said after a recent game. This is Mike Vaccaro, our good friend from the New York Post. He's a great sports writer. He used to be with the Star Ledger when the Star Ledger was the Star Ledger. They asked him about how he was playing. Here's what he said in the post-game press conference. I think I wasn't coachable enough. I don't know what it was. Maybe I felt too entitled. But I had to kind of talk with myself about the way I was playing. I needed to be more coachable. I needed to be a better teammate and let the basketball speak for myself. Mike Vaccaro writes 51 words. That's all it took for him to hold himself accountable. And Josh Hart, who is his teammate, said, this is the realest and most impressive post-game interview you're ever going to see. Now, it may or may not be. I'm just a fan of people saying, I was crappy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been crappy. I haven't been playing well. And that, to me, that's a leadership. It's not even a basketball issue. I'm off my game. Why is it so hard?
It is hard because as athletes, as leaders,
we always want to... Carl, see if I can get this back to you. Okay. All right, go ahead. Pick it up.
We always want to be on our game. We always want to seek perfection. We've talked about that before. It's about progress, not perfection. But we try to always learn, always grow. But in his case, what's really great is he owned his own failures, if you will, or you know.
No, they were.
Yeah, failures. And he is letting not only his team know, but also his fans know, I own this. I've got this. And that is a respectable trait. And I'm really proud of him for doing that.
I wish it were not so rare. That's all. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Josh Hart, his teammate, had to make a big deal about it, it's because it is a big deal, but it shouldn't be a big deal. I'm down. My wife says to me, oh, you're so big on owning mistakes.
You know,
yeah, I make a lot and I own them. What do you want me to do? I don't know. I just don't know why it's so difficult. It's part of leadership is owning it, learning from it, and working to not just keep doing the same thing over and over again. That's it. Speaking of leadership, Dr. Patrick Leahy, Pat Leahy is the president of Monmouth University. In-depth conversation about higher ed leadership in challenging times. Let's check it out. We're honored to be joined by Dr. Patrick Leahy, the president of Monmouth University in beautiful Monmouth County, New Jersey. Good to see you, Pat.
Nice to see you, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
You got it. Hey, listen, I was on the campus, I told you a while back. Our daughter plays field hockey and we're on Monmouth County campus. And we're also there for the HMH Gala, which was there as well. It's beautiful. Does everyone tell you that it's a beautiful campus?
They do. We've often compared to like Pepperdine. Yeah, if you've ever been on the campus at Pepperdine in Southern California, we're often considered the Pepperdine of the East Coast, which I'm quite proud of, working really hard to make it increasingly more beautiful and increasingly more functional for our students. But it's always great to hear from members of the community that they see what we're trying to do there.
Pat, do this for us. We talked to a whole range of higher ed leaders in the public, private sector, independent sector. How many students? Is it about 5,000?
5,000-ish. Mm-hmm.
I hate the question, who's a typical student? What are the demographics of the student body?
Yeah, the demographics are actually changing, so it's a very pertinent question, Steve. So, 70% or so of our students still come from the great state of New Jersey, increasingly from out of state, but still 70-30. In the past, we would have been a campus for, middle upper class students, and that's changing as we become more accessible as an institution. In fact, we're really proud of the fact that this past fall, in September, we enrolled the best class we've ever enrolled, in part because 55% of our first year class were what we call fly students, which is you're either the first in their family to pursue a 4-year college degree, and or are low income, as evidenced by their eligibility for federal Pell Grants. So we're trying to make an increasingly first-rate private education as accessible as possible. So it's harder for us now more than ever to sort of describe a typical student because the student body's diversifying in really great ways every year.
Yeah, let me follow up on this. I was asking one of your colleagues this question the other day about being a college president, and I don't think most people can appreciate what a college president does. And it's obviously it's different at different institutions. How much of your work as the president at Monmouth University, Pat, is A, fundraising, B, fundraising, C, how much of it is the economics, if you will, of running the place?
It gives me a chance to tell you one of my favorite definitions of a university president.
Go ahead.
Someone who lives in a big house, yet begs for a living. That is how I feel. So, to answer your question, I always say this, Steve, that 80% of my job is selling the place. Now, some big portion of that is asking for money. But 80% of the job is selling the place and hyping the place and trying to get people increasingly interested in it. And a big part of that is fundraising. We're really lucky as a not-for-profit institution that, in addition to our business model, we also have fundraising as a revenue source, if you will.
That's right.
It's a really unique, a great opportunity for us to enhance what we're able to do day in and day out through the generosity of donors. So, like all university presidents, I spend a lot of my time on it. I happen to love that part of the job, so it comes naturally to
Pat, hold on one second. 80% of my job is
me.
raising money as well to run our not-for-profit but highly entrepreneurial production company. But let me ask you this. I love when the deal gets done. I'll say that. You love the process?
Yeah. I love the process in part because, in my opinion, Steve, the best fundraising is the marriage of institutional need and donor passion. And my view of this is the process is trying to uncover that donor passion and connect it to almost limitless institutional need that we have and pull those together. And if we do that properly, it's a very, very satisfying thing for donors, as you know, when you connect with
Sure.
people who are so
Awesome.
generous. So I love that process. It's like putting little mini deals together.
You gotta be a deal maker and
Yeah, it's
partner. You
kind of like
partner, I
being a
forgot
deal
the fact,
maker.
you partner with a lot of folks too.
We do. I mean, one of our biggest partners is Hackensack Meridian Health right now. They we have been able over the last year and a half to partner with them in a very comprehensive manner so that we can grow at Monmouth University. I keep saying a healthcare juggernaut in the center part of the central part of the state. We know that one of the great threats to the delivery of healthcare in our community going forward is going to be the shortage of qualified nurses and physicians assistants and occupational therapists and on and on. We feel like it's incumbent upon us as an educational institution that serves our community to make sure that we're doing our part to produce as many of those healthcare providers as possible. Our growth was stunted a little bit without a major partnership. We now have that with Hackensack Meridian Health, and they've been able, through that partnership, to help us grow our programs, and we hope that that will continue in the future. So we're always on the lookout for partnerships.
How about this one? I don't know if this is a partnership, but I am excited. Talk about the Springsteen Initiative on campus.
That is a partnership. Thank you for positioning it that way.
Ahead.
It's one of the great things. I mean, I always say, Steve, to be the president of Monmouth University would be privilege enough for people in my field. But to be the president at Monmouth University when we are building the Bruce Springsteen Center for American Music is like next level altogether. Years ago, before I started at Monmouth, we hatched this partnership with the Bruce Springsteen organization to keep his archives, his legacy, his story here in the state of New Jersey. And we wanted it, hosted on a college campus so that
Sure.
it might be a place where researchers can come and where we could make this programming available to our students. And so we started this way back in 2017, and then I joined in 2019 with the dream of building what is now emerging as a 30,000 square foot center dedicated not only to telling Bruce Springsteen's story, but at his insistence, telling the story of American music in all of its forms. So when he insisted on that, Steve, this grew from a little idea to preserve his archives and turned it into what we believe will be one of the great cultural assets, not only in New Jersey, but in the entire country. And that building will have its grand opening in early June of this year.
That's awesome. And I'm reading off our prompt here. It's the Bruce Springsteen Archives and Center for American Music. That is awesome. At Monmouth University.
At Monmouth University, and how privileged are we, as I mentioned, to be able to host that center. And again, it is not just to tell Bruce's story. It is to tell the story and to celebrate the story of American music, which we think of as one of our great exports to the world, is American music.
Absolutely. Pat Leahy, Dr. Pat Leahy, is the president of Monmouth University. He loves fundraising and representing the university. I am pretty good at it when the deal gets done and I'm happy. But to your point, I have to tell you, Pat, being on your campus and having a feel for it, better than Pepperdine. I just want to put that out
Oh,
there.
well, you're nice to say that. Thank you.
Looking forward to be down there again and visiting soon. All the best to you and the team at Monmouth.
Thank you, Steve. Really appreciate it.
You guys, stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Menes, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant, but you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.
Lessons in Leadership is pleased to welcome Lisa Sawyer-Durman, who is the founder of Five Springs Infused Bourbon. Lisa, good to see you.
Great to see you, Steve.
Let me also share that I met Lisa with over our partners at Fedway. We'll put up the website for Fedway right now. The Fedway Leadership Academy, we've been doing for several years, a whole range of great leaders there that we're working with. And we did a Q&A with you about your leadership journey, entrepreneurism, partnership, et cetera. First of all, tell us what Five Springs Infused Bourbon is, and then we'll make the connection back to Fedway.
Sure. So I've been in the industry for 30 plus years and finally decided it was time to launch my own brand. And being a Kentucky native, it had to be a bourbon. And 2.5 years ago, I launched Five Springs Infused Bourbon. It's a bourbon that's made specifically for new bourbon drinkers, the next generation of bourbon drinkers, and specifically for bourbon cocktails, which we're seeing a rise in trends with the cocktail culture these days.
Talk about your partnership with Fedway.
Well, Fedway, I have a long history with Fedway. Just having been in the industry, I've worked with Fedway with many brands.
Describe what Fedway is for folks who may not know.
So folks who don't know, Fedway is a distributor, an alcohol beverage distributor in New Jersey. And as people may not know, because of the 21st Amendment to the Constitution, every single state has to have a distributor of alcohol beverage. So you cannot sell directly to a restaurant or to a retail store unless you go through a distributor. Fedway is one of the top distributors in New Jersey. And, I've been fortunate to work with them with brands that I didn't own, but now I'm working with them with Five Springs Infused Bourbon.
Great, folks. Mary, jump in.
First and foremost, thank you for, I personally have not tried this bourbon yet. So I do want to say that as a PSA, because I was afraid, because I've tried bourbons before, but hearing you say that this is a bourbon for introduction, I would love to be that person that comes home, has the carafe, and just sits and sips a little bit like my husband and my sons like to do. So looking
yes.
forward to trying it. So
you are a target consumer, because I am a bourbon drinker, and I feel like a lot of people think that they think it's unapproachable because it's too harsh. It's
yes.
too, you know, that the alcohol content is too high. And so we actually use bourbon, a high rye bourbon, but our alcohol content is 70. So less calories. And then also we remove the harshness of the bourbon and add just a touch of flavor. It's not like your typical flavored whiskey, but
you're speaking my language. I'm so excited
for you, and you're going to get a bottle as soon as this is over.
That sounds great. No problem. But yeah, so just to follow up on what Steve had said, obviously you took a risk. You were talk a little bit about your background. You were a lawyer, then you were working in the spirits industry for, 20 some odd years. How did you find the confidence in yourself to take that risk to say, you want to know what? There's all these brands out there. I want to do that. And I'm willing to take that risk, because there's so many people that are watching right now that may say, I want to open up a yoga studio. I want to open up a jewelry line. I'm just afraid to take that risk.
Yeah. And that was what held me back for many, many years. And I think, we take different risks at different times in our lives. So for me, I was at the point where I wasn't raising a family. My children were out of college and I was looking kind of for that next step. So I was encouraged by a lot of people, like, it's now or never. You know, in retrospect, I wish that I had taken a risk 10 years earlier. You know, you hear people say all the time that you have to bet on yourself. And I talked a lot about being an entrepreneur, but was afraid. And when I kind of analyzed like why I was afraid, it was 100% because of my reputation. I'd been in the industry for so long and just did not want to do something that wasn't going to be successful. You know, I'd had success in other, I'd been a lawyer, I'd been COO of Stoli. I, was running the North Division for McAllen. So, had been moving up in my career, and the idea that I might take a risk and fail was definitely what was holding me back prior to finally doing it 2 years ago.
Stay on that theme. Mary and I were talking about the definition of failure. That failing at something or falling short doesn't make one a failure unless they stay there and don't learn from it. So here's what I'm curious about. I'm fascinated by the question of confidence. At the Fedway Leadership Academy, I coach a significant amount around confidence in the way one presents him or herself. Well, I've never done it before, and it's not my thing. And what if I lose my place and all these things that I understand people say and they believe? Confidence for you, how much of it were you willing to say, if I fall short in the beginning, I can learn from it and I'm confident that I'll grow from it, versus I got to have a home run out of the box? Because I'm one of those believers, without getting on my soapbox, that we don't always hit that home run and we do make mistakes, which is part of the process. And unless those mistakes are fatal, Is it not a learning process? I'm off my soapbox. Go ahead, Lisa.
It should be a learning process. I mean, that is what, taking risk is all about. And, you're right, it's not about failure, it's about learning from it. I was very specialized in the alcohol beverage industry. I was an alcohol beverage lawyer. So I feel like throughout my career, it was always, I'm not willing to take one of these steps unless I know everything about it. And it took me 25 years to realize, A, you're not always going to know everything, even though you think
Okay.
that you will. And B, knowing that you don't do something well and taking that opportunity to learn how you can do it better or how to do it a different way is a learning process in and of itself and not a failure. So I had worked with a few startups before, so I think that that kind of gave me the ability to say, you know what, I've done a few startups before. There's so much that I don't know about running my own business, but I know enough and I'm confident enough now to ask the questions that I don't know.
You're confident you're going to find out
Right.
whatever you know. Mary, go ahead.
Talk about your vision. I'm leaning in so much because I think every human being out there has that. I wanted to start a dog brand. I was trying to start like, okay, we need collars, we need leashes, we need this, we
Hold
need
on one
that.
second. I thought you said you wanted to work with me for the rest of your life.
Oh,
Oh,
no, anybody that is watches
I
Lessons
misunderstood. I
Leadership Brand, your
misunderstood.
mother.
I misunderstood. I thought that was our plan, but go ahead.
But you realize there are so many obstacles, there's so many dead ends, there's so many, and Steve talk about it, Steve and I talk about it on here all the time. No doesn't always mean no, that just because you try to open up one door, you try something, it didn't work. Talk about your experience with hitting that bump in the road and what gave you that grit to just keep going.
Honestly, I have this little motto. I mean, I'm gonna actually get it tattooed, I think, on my arm at some point. But it's like I'm a big fan of you just keep swimming, just keep going, one foot in front of the other. And I've hit so many bumps in the road along the way starting this brand. It's like from sourcing or the tariffs. So, all of a sudden my cost of goods have tripled because of tariffs and things that you're not expecting. And it is just a matter of just saying, okay, how can I find a solution? And I look at it every day like doing a crossword puzzle. Like for me, part of owning my own business is like I'm enjoying the process of figuring things out. Like it's
Sure it
keeping my
is.
brain active. I don't always want to say like I have a passion for it. It's just that I love learning and I'm curious to figure things out. And I think that everyone who starts their own business, has to have that mentality because otherwise you will get frustrated. There's always going to be a bump in the road. I mean, every single day there's something that we're dealing with, a different issue, but I'm learning along the way, and that keeps me excited to see what's next.
So just think about what Lisa's saying. So she has a game plan. She's meticulous about putting the plan together. And there it is on paper. And I bet on your bingo card list or in your plan, I bet tariffs were not on it. And all I'm
Tariffs.
saying is that's the point. Of course, you make the plan. Of course, you be strategic. And then, huh? Where'd that come from? Three quarters of the game, and I'll get off my soapbox, is having a game plan, but in sports, constantly calling audibles, changing the play because the defense looks different. We didn't know these tariffs were coming. They're on, they're off. It's not even about being political. It's stuff happens.
Yeah, this stuff
COVID
happens.
happens. Where was
Yeah.
COVID? COVID wasn't on anyone's game
A
plan.
snowstorm. I just had this. I'm doing my next production run. I'm in Kentucky. We have a window of time. Snowstorm. Product can't be delivered. I have, a batch of liquid waiting there to be bottled, but I'm missing my, labels. So it's that there is always something.
By the way, we're taping we're in the beginning of February. I said
Beginning of
January before,
February.
the beginning of February. It's cold, it's snowy. The snow is staying around for till June, I think. No, I'm joking. At least in
Feels like it.
Jersey. Yeah. But Lisa, listen, you are a wonderful example of a leader, entrepreneur who has a game plan and a passion and had a safe situation where you're very good at and decided to try something in a serious way. I mean, what else is there? That's what makes this country great, is people trying to do things, learning in the process. And I bet you've inspired a lot of other people. So one more time, a plug for Lisa Sawyer Derman, who is the founder of Five Springs Infused Bourbon. Thank you to our friends at Fedway, the Fedway Leadership Academy, to Rob, John, Max, and the entire team there. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. Stay warm.
Yeah, we will. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. All right, folks, 2 minute drill. Got 2 minutes left. Mary, I was remiss. Our partners at Fedway, I talked about Max, John, and Rob, and also Richard Leventhal, the guy who makes it all come together at the top there. And again, thank you to our great friends at Fedway. Check them out. They're terrific people doing important things and incredibly philanthropic corporation that funds a lot of not-for-profits. Mary, do you have any quotes?
I always have a quote ready. You know that, Steve. I'm going to go with someone that we've talked about on the show a little bit. Simon Sinek, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. Leadership Bob. Communication is not about saying what we think. It's about ensuring others hear what we mean. I'll say it again. Communication is not about saying what we think. It's about ensuring others hear what we mean. What does that mean to you?
What does it mean to you?
It means to me that you and I talk about it all the time. You need to communicate to be understood. It's one thing to hear words coming out of your mouth and you understand them, but you need to be others focused. You need to be audience focused, because if you're not, then you're not sure that the other person or your audience is understanding you.
Hey, Mary, you've never seen me plug this book before.
Oh, I love all these new books.
It is a perfect title for a book in light of what you just said.
Great.
The book is called You Just Don't Understand.
Mm.
And it's written by Deborah Tannen, who is...
Love Deborah. She's someone, great.
She's great. Men and women in conversation. Mary, do you believe sometimes in communication that men and women, in part because of gender, don't connect and understand each other, in part because of gender?
Definitely. We have different ways of being raised, different experiences, different leadership approaches. So yes, that is a factor.
And you are saying that men are more effective communicators and leaders. Is that what you just said, or did I misunderstand?
That's a trap, because Elvin said we have to go to black. So you know that I'm not going to get the last word, but we will continue this on another episode of Lessons in Leadership.
Well, sure. Elvin just happens to be a male leader who listens to women, particularly in his own home, because they are the real leaders. That's Lessons in Leadership. See you next time. By the way, I hope I don't get in trouble for what I just said.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Menes, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Next, please. Okay, we need a neutral expression. Sir, you're smiling.
Oh, am I?
Over 1 million lives in the U.S. have been saved by organ donation. So when you choose to become a donor, you're doing something good, which can make you feel really good.
Next.
Register today at njsn.org.